This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
Come, Holy Spirit, and kindle within us the fire of your love. Take our words and speak through them. Take our mind and think through them. Take our hearts and souls and set them on fire with love for you. Amen. Please be seated. Dee, where are you? Dee, where are you?
Wendy.
Wendy, I'm right here.
Oh. No, I mean, where are you?
Wendy? I'm at St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida.
No. I mean, where are you? Like, where are you? Inside.
Oh.
Where are you, girl?
Oh. Okay. Well, a lot. So they're doing the roof over there, and it smells bad, and I'm not able to get in my office.
Oh.
And we've got the camp coming up in less than 3 weeks.
CCC.
Yeah. And Dimri was here visiting, and she just left on Friday. Marty left yesterday, and so it's like I'm kind of like feeling a lot of stuff right now, but I'm good because I know I've gone through stuff like this before. God is in charge. We will move past this.
Yeah, like you always do.
Thank you
very much. So where are you? Where are you is the question for the first half of my reflection. Where are you? Really, where are you? So there's a story that might give you an example of somebody who knows where they are and somebody who doesn't know where they are. So this white guy driving down the road in a car, and he's real frustrated, he's really, really mad. Because he's late to his daughter's birthday party, his cell phone had died, his other child borrowed his car charger, so he can't charge his phone, and he's running out of gas. And he's a long way to go yet to get to his daughter's birthday party, and he's getting madder and madder and madder. Finally, he sees a gas station. He pulls into the gas station, and there's a line. Of course, he says, there's a line. Well, he gets in line, and he's right behind this big red pickup truck. And they're going along, and finally, it's the red pickup truck's turn, and he doesn't move. And the guy's looking, and he doesn't even have time to honk his horn. He gets so exasperated that he pulls out a line, pulls around the truck in a mean, ready, fast way, pulls in front of him, gets out of his car, starts pumping his gas. Well, by this time, the guy in the big red truck notices what's going on, and he's this big black guy. And he gets out of the car, and he walks over to him, and he said, "Excuse me, sir, I was next, and you cut in line. You cut me off." And the guy said, "Well, you didn't move, and I'm in a hurry. Why don't you just go home, boy?" He said that. He actually says that. Well, the guy in the red truck is taken aback. He cannot believe that somebody could possibly say such a thing in this day and age. Couldn't believe it. So he takes a deep breath, and he figures this is just not worth it. So he gets back in his truck. He pulls out a line. He goes over to the 7-Eleven, and he parks his car, and he waits for the guy to leave. Guy finishes getting his gas. He pulls out of the gas station, goes down the road. The guy in the red truck comes back, gets in line, pumps his gas, and he figures, okay. He said, I'm going to send a little prayer to that guy. So he goes down the road, and it's kind of a deserted road. And after a mile or two, he sees the guy who had been so rude and racist to him pulled over to the side of the road, and the smoke is just coming out of his hood. His car had completely broken down. And the guy in the pickup truck pulls over. He gets out of his truck, and he said, "May I help you?" And the guy's like, "You would do that?" He said, "Yeah, How can I help you? He said, well, I need to call my daughter because I'm late for the birthday party. He said, well, here, use my phone. Called his daughter. He said, could I make one more call for the phone truck? The tow truck? He said, sure. Calls the tow truck. The guy waits there with him. The tow truck comes, puts a car on, they go. He says, would you like me to drive you to your daughter's house? And he said, you would do that? After all that I did to you? He said, yes. My mom taught me to treat other people as I want to be treated. And so he took him to his daughter's house. Now, if God were saying, where are you, to the first guy, I'd pretty much say he was lost, right? He was lost in his prejudice and his awful racism. And if God were to ask the other guy, where are you, he'd say, ah, you're home. You're home with me. You're at home. In the Genesis story that we heard Phyllis just read, God is asking that question of all of us. Adam and Eve, in that beautiful, beautiful mythology of the creation story, represents every man and every woman. And God is asking them, as he asks us, where are you? How come you're covering yourself up all you know, worried and shamed and not willing to bear your soul to me? Where are you? Where are you? And God asks each one of us the same exact question. No matter what we have gone through, no matter how awful we have been to other people, maybe, or how awful other people have been to us, or however lost we might feel right now in grief, or in troubles about our family, like way deep down is the question, where are you? The hardest thing that you're dealing with right now, all of that, feeling lost or alone, no matter what it is, God is with you saying, where are you? Where are you? I am here. I haven't gone anywhere. There's an exercise I'd like to invite you to do with me. It's very brief, but it's also something that I think you'll appreciate. If you take your dominant hand, your right or left hand, and make a fist, and let it represent anything that's holding you tight, anything you'd like to hide from. Hold that fist, and then your other hand, just relax it in your lap. Relax it in your lap. Kind of like this, like a cup, a vessel. And then I invite you to close your eyes and take that tightly clenched fist that represents anything from which you're hiding and place it in the other palm and let it gently open as the other palm just receives it completely. And let it open and relax also. And open your eyes. That exercise you can do anytime, anywhere, and let that non-dominant hand represent the unconditional love of God, the unconditional love of Jesus Christ that is always with you. And let it remind you that God's always saying, where are you? Where are you? Are you home with me? So that's the first half of my reflection. Where are you? Where are you? God always calling us home, no matter what. So now, we can be asked the question, who are you? Who are you? So, in our gospel, Jesus is pretty early on in his ministry, but he knows who he is. This is the Gospel of Mark, and remember, things move really fast in this gospel. We're in chapter 3 for our gospel lesson today, but in the first 3 chapters, this is what's already happened. He's been baptized in the River Jordan. He's gone out, and when he was baptized, he heard who he was. You are my son in whom I am well pleased, my beloved. So he's baptized. He goes out into the wilderness. He's tempted. He overcomes the temptation of the devil. He comes back. He picks Andrew and James and John because he knows he's going to need help. He knows he's going to need that. They go to the synagogue. They're in the synagogue. First thing he does is that he heals a man with unclean spirits, casts out these unclean spirits. It's probably some form of a convulsion disorder or something. They didn't know what it was called back then. So he heals on the Sabbath day in the synagogue. Then they leave the synagogue. He goes to Simon's house and he cures Simon's mother-in-law. And then the text tells us he healed many, many others, many others. Then he goes to a deserted place, like he was always doing, to get centered himself in who he was. Then he does more healings of a leper, a paralytic. He calls a fourth person, Levi, who we know as Matthew. Then more teaching, beautiful teaching. They can't believe the teaching that he's doing, and with authority. And then the Sabbath time comes again, the Sabbath day, and they're walking through the fields. His disciples pick the wheat. Maybe they were going to make bread later, but it was on the Sabbath day and it was considered work. And then again, he heals a man with a withered hand, heals him completely on the Sabbath. So by this time, word has spread everywhere about this guy. He's radical. They're saying he's out of his mind, but there are crowds and crowds and crowds following him. They can't get enough of him. They know something's going on. His heart is speaking to the depths of their being, where they really are. And the crowd is just overwhelming him. He sees that he needs to have a team with him, and so he goes up the mountain with the people that will be the apostles, and he appoints them all apostles, the 12. They go back down the mountain, and the crowds are even worse, which brings us to today's gospel. So he must be feeling overwhelmed himself, but he knew who he was. He knew who he was. So he goes inside house, and all the people are outside, and he's in with his followers. And his mom and his brothers and his sisters are looking for him because they're worried about him. They think he's crazy. They think something's gone wrong with this guy. And so they're calling him. They want to take him home to protect him. They also know it's very dangerous because of the Pharisees and the Sadducees coming after him for doing all these things on the Sabbath and for healing. And they were also very jealous, worried that he was going to take their power. They had no clue what kind of power they were even dealing with. And so they send a messenger inside to say, you know, your mom and your brothers and sisters are outside. They want to take you home. And he's like, these are my mother and brothers and sisters. This is my family. And it wasn't that he was discounting his mom or his brothers or sisters. He always spoke in a way that made us really think, really get to the heart of it. He said, this is my family. The people who are following me, the people who know who they are in following God's will, in following the will of love. This is my family. On the piece of paper in your pews, if you would all get those and the pencil, this is an exercise about who you are. And if you would take the pencil, and it might be hard. Did you get one? Everybody's got one, okay? And right at the top, we did this exercise several years ago, but it's worth doing like once a year. So at the top of the paper, you write, I am. Just I am at the very top of the paper. And I'll write along with you so I know the time. And then number 1 to 10 down the left side of the paper. And then using nouns, I am whatever the noun is. I am a daughter, I am a sister, I am a woman, I am a mother, whatever fits for you. 10 things. Go ahead and write, if you would. And you at home, I hope you're doing this along with us. If you get stuck, it can be things you do also, like I am a reader. I am an artist. I am a nature lover. But make it a noun. And when you're finished, just look up and I'll know that you're finished. Okay? Ready? All right. So now, look over the list. Cross out 5 things. Cross them out. Okay? Got 5 left? Right? Okay, now, cross off 3 more. It's hard. It's not easy, right? Everybody have 2 left? No? Yes? Okay. Now cross off 1 more. And now cross off the last one. And what are you left with? I am. This is an exercise we used to do with our hospice patients when I was in nursing school. And it's very powerful. I am is also the name that God used, right, in the burning bush. I am that I am. We are made in the image and likeness of God. And at our core, we are that. We are. It doesn't mean we are God. We are not God. But we are expressions of God. And our job is to find that expression and set it free. But always knowing who we are and whose we are by coming back to that again and again and again. There's a little story in closing, and then I'd like to read you a poem. The story is at the end of a little book called The Human Condition by Thomas Keating. It's a great book. And the setting was in a hospital back in the days when AIDS was first being diagnosed, 40 years ago, if you can believe it. And the stigma attached with AIDS was so horrible that people that contracted AIDS were treated like lepers. And nobody wanted to be around them, nobody wanted to touch them. Well, there was a man with AIDS who was dying in a hospital. Death was imminent. He could speak still. He was still conscious and coherent, but he was panicked about dying. It was so unexpected. He was shaking with fear. He was so scared that he was going to die. And so a nurse walks in the room, and she had been trained in a technique called therapeutic touch that I actually learned when I was in fundamentals of nursing in nursing school. And it's a method that it's very gentle, just above the skin, just a couple of inches above the skin. And it's just, you go over the whole body and over the arms, and at the least it's relaxing. And studies have shown that there are bones that heal quicker with it. There's a whole plethora of information if you want to look it up. Well, this nurse knew about therapeutic touch. And he said, "Can't you help me? Can't you do anything to help me? I am panicked." And she said, "Well, I know a technique called therapeutic touch. I would be happy to do that with you." And he said, "Anything. Okay, good." So she begins this very gentle treatment. And he begins to relax. His shaking stops. He puts his head back. His eyes kind of roll back in his head. And she thought he died. But she continued the treatment. She was kind of saying a prayer along with him, grateful that he was relaxed and comforted. And he hadn't died. He opened his eyes and he said to her, "You have no idea what you have done for me. You have no idea." And she said, "Well, what?" And he said, "You've given me unconditional love." An hour later, he died. That is what we are. Made in the image and likeness of God, you are love, deep in your soul. And we can tap into that, even if we feel lost, even if we don't know where we are. That is who we are, in following the love of Jesus Christ and in following God. You are love. It's our job to spread that love. This is a poem from God in Celtic Daily Prayer from our friends in Lindisfarne. And it's by Paul Field. Go peaceful in gentleness through the violence of these days. Give freely, show tenderness in all your ways. Through darkness in troubled times, let holiness be your aim. Seek wisdom, let faithfulness burn like a flame. God speed you, God lead you, and keep you wrapped around his heart. May you be known by love. Be righteous. Speak truthfully in a world of greed and lies. Show kindness. See everyone through heaven's eyes. God hold you and fold you and keep you wrapped around his heart. May you be known by love. Amen.